Kansas City is well on its way to building a downtown streetcar line, a two-mile project from City Market to Union Station. And if its backers have their way, there will be more miles of track extending farther into the city. But Kansas City once had more than 300 miles of streetcar track, one of the largest systems in America, and tore out or paved over it all. I'm Monroe Dodd, and on today's Central Standard Friday, we'll talk to one of the prime movers of the latest streetcar system and compare streetcars then and now. Later in the hour, we'll look at some of Kansas City's favorite legends and whether any of them are, well, true. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this news. Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. Kansas City is well on its way to constructing a downtown streetcar line. It'll be a two-mile project from the City Market area to Union Station, and if its backers have their way, it'll be joined someday by more streetcar lines extending farther into the city. They won't be the first. From the 1870s to the 1950s, the Kansas City metro area boasted a streetcar system that at one point was among the longest-reaching city rail lines in America. But in 1957, the last Kansas City streetcar of that era entered the trolley barn. The tracks were paved over, and for more than half a century, Kansas City streetcars have existed mostly in memory, in books, or in the imaginations of some dreamers. Can we learn anything from our previous experience with streetcars? Well, someone who can help us answer that, and one of the many folks who made the latest streetcar dream a reality, is Russ Johnson, now serving his second term in the Kansas City Council, representing Platte and part of Clay Counties. He joins us in the studio today. Good morning, Russ.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Later in today's program, we'll go into some of Kansas City's legends, the stuff that stories are made of, which of them are true and which are someone's idle wish. But first to streetcars. Russ Johnson, you're described in some circles as the most fervent advocate for streetcars on the city council. Tell us, how did you get that way?
Well, I think it's because I like to solve problems, to be honest with you. I'm a computer programmer by trade. Huh. And I got into this city council job because I have a passion, I guess, for urban cities and how they work. And, of course, infrastructure and transportation is a key part of it. I think that since the day I've moved to Kansas City in 1993, I knew that the people in this metro area wanted some form of rail transit, but they struggled for so long to figure out how to do it. And so while I was on the council, I worked on a lot of different problems. I built some interchanges, built some highways, and, you know, did other things. But I always was thinking about this streetcar problem and this rail transit problem. And I think that after thinking about it long enough, I finally maybe came across an idea that might get us started, and it turned out it was a workable idea.
When did you begin learning about Kansas City's streetcar system, that extensive thing that used to exist?
Well, interestingly enough, my mother, Eileen, lived here in 1951, right out of high school. And she has told this story many a times, and especially since I moved to Kansas City, about how she lived here and rode the streetcar system. She rode the 12th Street streetcar to work, and she rode the streetcar out to Starlight Theater to go see the shows. So, and I tell you, I've heard that story probably more times than I could ever count. So it's been something that I guess that seed might have been sown long in my youth.
What is it about streetcars that fires the imagination of so many of us? Why do we long for that kind of thing?
I think that it could be the same reason why we longed to see that sports car, you know, driving by on the highway. We think it's cool. We think it's neat. I mean, when an old steam locomotive pulls up to Union Station, people run down there and go look at it. When a really nifty type of plane shows up at the airport, people go out there and look at that. You know, streetcars and rail transit kind of fit into that same category. We like things that aren't just mundane as Americans, and rail transit is something that's just not your typical thing you do every day.
Is that why, and despite the best efforts of a lot of transit advocates, buses still seem kind of humdrum to a lot of people?
You know, I think it's a cultural thing, and especially I see I think if you see cities that have robust transit systems, especially around rail, the bus system is more heavily used. But if you have a car-focused culture, it seems like the buses are kind of viewed as a step down from your preferred mode of a car. We believe that when streetcars are up and running, there will be a lot of people that will use transit that never have used it before. And those people will not only use rail transit, but they will also some of them will also use the bus service because it'll be put together in a way that makes it easy to use and to get from one mode to the other.
If you see the streetcars, the light rail in other cities, if you're driving through Denver on your way to vacation or something like that and see, say, one of the Denver cars or one of the ones in St. Louis, they look sleek, they look cool, they look smooth, and they ride pretty well too, don't they?
Yeah, they've come a long way from the old trolleys that used to run on the streets of Kansas City. The tracks are seamless. There's no clickety-clack. There's no the suspension is pretty smooth. It's a level boarding. You can just walk on. It's the floor of the vehicles are all the same height. Air conditioned.
Yeah.
So it's a very nice experience.
As long as we're talking a little bit about yesteryear, at one time, Kansas City had more than 300 miles of streetcar lines. They went east to Independence and west to KCK and south to the Dodson area around 85th Street and so on. And then in the teens and 20s, there were the interurbans that took people. You could ride a light rail or a rail system from here to St. Joseph or Excelsior Springs, even Lawrence. What happened to all that, and what happened to all that infrastructure that we used to have?
Well, I mean, the number one culprit was the car.
Yeah.
And I think that we all understand that. There were other factors as well, though. And, a lot of those systems were private ventures, just like an airline's a private venture. And guess what? Airlines go broke, and so did the streetcars back then. And the regulatory environment was not that favorable. They regulated the fares they could charge. They capped them, so you could only make so much money. And also the city charged a lease, essentially, for being in the street. So not only was there amount of money they could collect capped, but they had to pay to be in the street. And also the city was taking this policy that said, well, if we're going to replace a bridge and you had streetcar tracks on it, they went to the streetcar company and said, you need to help pay for the cost of replacing this bridge. The streetcar company said, we can run a bus over top that bridge for free and not have to pay for replacing that bridge. And so we really kind of had governmental policies in place that essentially drove the streetcars out of business.
In fact, one of the first streetcar lines abandoned was back in the 30s when the inner city viaduct needed repairs.
That's
you
exactly
want to pay
right.
for it? No, we don't. And that's why streetcars stopped going to Independence in the 1930s, as I understand it. They were, in effect, like private investor-owned utilities today. Private money was put up, but in order that you don't have five streetcar lines all trying to plow down Walnut, there would be a utility agreement where the city lets you use that space in the middle.
Exactly.
So when it snowed, the streetcar company, right, had to plow the street. Privately owned, not publicly funded, despite what we think of them today. What do you know about Kansas City's once vast streetcar system? Join our conversation at 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888. Now, you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us. Our handle is KCURSCT. Let me get that right, KCURCST. Sorry, all you tweeters out there. The fares were limited by the city council. Routes were limited. Maintenance had to be done. And yet they were still a mighty, mighty thing until the automobile knocked them out?
Well, the story of the streetcar kind of is also the story of relates to downtown. And I think that what happened with the automobile was it allowed for a different kind of city expansion that never before could have been realized. And when that occurred, you focused more on highways and interstates, and you focused more on arterial systems, and you focused more on suburban development rather than on what was going on downtown. So if you look at where our downtown was and how it declined, it matches the change of transportation patterns exactly. What we found, though, is that we have a new generation of Americans. They are younger than 35. They typically want to live inside of a urban environment. They grew up in the suburbs, and they're thinking, you know, we really don't want to sit in traffic 45 an hour, 2 hours every day going back and forth to work. We'd like to be able to live close to work and not spend so much money on gas and live back in that urban environment. So over the last 10 years, the population of downtown Kansas City, and this is not just unique to Kansas City, it's happened everywhere else that has a reasonable downtown, the population is growing again. It's becoming a neighborhood again. And that is not just an anomaly. That is a trend. And guess what? There's a lot of empty nesters, older folks that no longer have kids that said, you know, I'm not so much worried about the quality of schools. I want to live someplace where I can walk out my door and take a stroll around the block, go find a place to eat, go find something to do to entertain me and not necessarily have to get in my car and drive somewhere to do it. So I think that the story of most urban environments and the streetcar are interconnected.
So you believe that streetcars downtown, the new system, will help people get around better. It'll enliven the place and draw more people there. But there's also an argument that actually goes back to the 19th century that if you build it, shops and stores and people will come just to be around stations. Isn't that right?
All the evidence shows that if you put rails in the ground and you have a well-planned system, all the development that you expect to be around it will follow. And that has been the case in every system that's up and running, again, that was well-planned out. In fact, some of my colleagues were just in Seattle for the National League of Cities, and they came back with these stories about Seattle, and they took a tour, and they said, you know, this restaurant wasn't here, this business wasn't here, this housing development wasn't here, all along the streetcar lines. And by the way, they pointed out, they said, not only wasn't here, they said, those people have told us unequivocally, you know, just straight to our face, that they're there solely because the streetcar line's there. Now, some would say, well, that development would occur elsewhere. It might, but isn't it better to focus your development along a corridor and create a neighborhood and create that sort of interconnected environment than having it a store here and then four or five surface parking lots and then another store and then more per surface parking lots? And then, of course, by the time you've done, you're out to 190th Street and it took you an hour to drive out there. And, you know, there's two different ways of looking at urban life. There are some that want to live in the suburbs and that's okay, but there are some that don't. And we need to provide a place for those folks as well.
If you, as I understand, if you turn this on its head in a way and go back to the 19th century, several of the streetcar lines of Kansas City, and they were built often one by one, were built by developers who wanted to get people out to their developments. The line out to Troost Lake, the William Winters line out to Independence. We want you to come out and buy land, but you can't get here. We'll build a streetcar line to this there. It's sort of the same, but upside down.
Well, the Strang line out to Johnson County, that was built to lure people out there to come buy houses.
Uh-huh.
It was built by the developer. And, yeah, the story is basically there's an empty plot of land. They're going to put some houses on it. They built the streetcar out to that empty plot of land, and in the price of your house was the cost of building that streetcar. Today, it's similar. If there's an empty plot of land, in the price of your house is the cost of the new roads, the streetlights, the sewer line, the water line, et cetera. The developer has to put in all that infrastructure. It's just that the infrastructure of choice, you know, before 1950 was streetcar lines.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Munro Dodd. In the first part of today's program, we're talking with Kansas City Councilmember Russ Johnson about streetcars of the past and streetcars of the future. And we have a caller, Teresa in Belton. Good morning, Teresa. Teresa, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I remember over 65 years ago, we would drive down to Brookside and take the streetcar from Brookside down to Main, 12th and Main.
And how was the ride?
Well, 65 years ago, it's hard to remember, but it was pretty exciting. And the most exciting thing was at Christmas time, as a young child, I looked forward to seeing Santa Claus in the gazebo there on the corner. It was located about where the school is now, where that playground or the parking lot is, across from the shops in Brookside.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful time. And then years later, in the late 50s, early 60s, my mother worked downtown at Duff and Rep, and fine furniture store, and she took the bus from Belton to Kansas City.
Now, you must have ridden buses, too. How would you compare the bus ride to the streetcar ride?
Well, the streetcar, that was, like I say, over 65 years ago. I was just 4 or 5, and so it's hard to remember. But I lived in Independence and was able to go down to Burstein Appleby, which was on McGee, from the square in Independence, and I worked down at Burstein Appleby in the 60s. And it was a wonderful bus ride, you know.
Okay. All right, Teresa, thanks so much for your call this morning.
Okay. I hope it progresses to Brookside again.
Okay. Well, Russ Johnson, what about that? What is the current plan in a few words, and what are the hopes for the future for the streetcar system to come?
Well, just in a few words, you know, we started downtown with 2 miles, and that was always the key word. We're starting. It was never the ending. And Now, just yesterday, the city council said its preferred expansion routes are Independence Avenue, 31st, or Linwood. We have to make a decision on which street there. And then Main Street, essentially down to Waldo or further. Interesting enough, there was a streetcar line at one point on every one of those streets. Mm-hmm. Kansas City grew up around streetcars. If you look at the development patterns and how our grid streets are laid out. They're laid out, and the development occurred because there was a streetcar there. When we took them out, obviously things changed. A lot of people went to the suburbs. You put them back, people will come back and recongregate around those streetcar lines.
Leslie asked a question on Twitter. Was urban sprawl a factor in the streetcar decline of the old system?
You know, from a streetcar point of view, absolutely it was. Now, when Kansas City took its streetcar system apart, it didn't say rail was bad. It immediately tried to start putting rail system back in, but it was doing it in a way that was trying to get people to as far away from downtown as possible. In 1968, there was a bond issue that was put to the voters of Kansas City that would take it would have went from downtown to the airport, and it was defeated. And, of course, there's been other plans put forward ever then. But interestingly enough, the conversation in America and in Kansas City for the last 50 years has been, how can we build highways or roads or whatever else to get people away from downtown as fast as possible so they can go home from work? It's the escape from downtown plan. And if you look at large rail systems, commuter rail or big light rail systems, that's what they're designed around. Streetcar can be used for that. It's not exclusive to not being able to do that. But streetcar is designed to create a urban center of activity that it may also allow you to get further away from downtown. But it's how to rebuild downtown and the adjacent downtown neighborhoods, not to figure out how to get you out of there 20 miles away as fast as possible.
Let's go now to Michael in Kansas City. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. I applaud your efforts to do the show. I think everybody's – I can't imagine people not being happy about seeing the streetcars coming to Kansas City. But I do have a comment about where did the streetcars go. I am from Los Angeles, and although I wasn't there at the time, there was great resistance from the car companies and the tire companies and the oil companies really did not want streetcars because they were taking business away from them. So there is a judgment against Goodyear and also GM. I don't have the internet in front of me, but you can look up the details that basically they conspired to buy streetcar companies. And I don't know if that happened in Kansas City, whether they purchased the streetcar company in Kansas City, but oftentimes that is what happened. Companies would buy them and then let them go into disrepair and let them become unpopular in that way. So the demise of the streetcar was not out of popularity, and it was not out of urban sprawl, because as you pointed out before, urban sprawl was part of the design of streetcars. So it's really an issue that we had companies that took apart the streetcars, and we need to, as communities, put them back together.
Russ?
A lot of what he's saying, there is evidence that did happen in various places. He's from Los Angeles. Los Angeles had the longest streetcar line in the world, was in Los Angeles. And you think about that city, if you've ever been there, like, how could that have ever happened in Los Angeles? But that was the case.
Well, I've seen the movie Who Killed Roger Rabbit.
That's right. And that was an interesting they definitely played upon on history there. I don't know of any evidence that occurred in Kansas City. I don't think it did. But what we do know is that the car, tire, and oil company kind of saw the streetcar as competition. And if you want to be in business and want to sell more of your product, sometimes it's better to figure out how to get rid of your competition. And I think in some cases that may have occurred.
Michael, thank you so much for your call. Long ago, well, in the past incarnation, Russ Johnson, of streetcars in Kansas City, the tracks went right down the middle of streets, Main, Walnut, Grand, and so forth. And if you wanted to get on the streetcar, you had to walk out into the middle of the street and wait there in a zone protected by little tiny bumps that were supposed to keep the fend off the cars and things. How will this starter streetcar line that's coming up, that goes for 2 miles, almost most of it on Main Street, how will it operate in terms of picking up passengers, and how does it get over to the curb?
The first 2 miles are going to be essentially what's called side running, which means they're going to run curbside. And there will still be parking between the streetcar tracks and the sidewalk. But wherever there's a station, the parking will stop. The curb will come out to the street, and a station will be built in a couple parking spaces. So you will be able to walk right off the sidewalk, walk right on the streetcar without having to cross any traffic whatsoever or having to cross the street, unless, of course, you want to go the opposite direction, then you'll have to cross the street and go to the other station. Now, not all systems work that way. Some are run in the center of the street, and the station platforms are in the center of the street, a protected platform. And Kansas City's, as we expand, we may use that. That may be a better fit in some areas. But for our first 2 miles in our densest urban area, we felt that the side running, curbside boarding and disembarking was the best choice for that urban environment and the pedestrian.
I've read that as soon as the automobile came along and became inexpensive enough for a lot of people to buy, streets with streetcars on them started to get crowded. And some people even blame the streetcars for the crowding when it was the autos that came along. I think I've read that Mayor Bartle, when the Troost line was shut down, said, well, it's so good we're getting rid of these tracks on those bloody islands in the middle of the tracks. On Main Street, once this line is finished, how is automobile traffic going to be handled?
Well, anytime you do anything that's not car-focused, it's going to be disruptive to cars. When you paint a crosswalk so pedestrians can get across the street, it's disruptive to cars. The only transportation system we have where cars are always number one is, of course, our interstate system. It is a mixed transportation environment, and there has to be compromises between all modes, between a pedestrian, a bicyclist, a bus, a streetcar, a car, a truck, et cetera. And what we do is we have a lot of smart people at City Hall that have a lot of expertise in this, and we're working those problems. We understood that there would be some issues with Main Street, and so Baltimore and Walnut were converted to two-way streets. Mm-hmm. They used to be one-way streets, northbound only. Now they are, for example, Walnut, it's a long connection. It's two-way. It's functioning excellent as a two-way street. In fact, I'll tell you a little, the story is, for about 6 years I've been on the council, I've been trying to get Walnut converted from one-way to two-way. The streetcar helped push that conversation. It was opposed by a lot of people that thought it would be disastrous. And then after it was done, those same people came and said, oh, my gosh, why didn't we do this a long time ago? This is like, it looks like a real street again.
Yes, I suppose so. And they've been one way for many decades around here.
Again, they were made one way so you can get into downtown to get to work and then get out of downtown. You don't want one-way streets when you're trying to get people to live, work, and play within the same proximity.
Auto traffic be allowed at all times on Main Street while the streetcars are running? Will there be certain lights that change when the streetcar comes by? How will that work?
The streetcar will run right in the same lane of traffic as a car and a bus. The signals will be timed to allow the streetcar to move faster up and down the street. But if the light is red and the streetcar comes up to a red light, it's going to stop just like anybody else. We're adding some turn lanes, some left-hand turn lanes, some right-hand turn lanes that are out of the way of the streetcars so that you keep people out, moving and out of the way. But other than that, I think the idea is that Main Street's going to become just that. It's going to become a Main Street-type environment where the car is not dominating the entire environment, where a pedestrian and a streetcar and businesses that have that are pedestrian-focused have a have an equal all are on equal footing. You know, we don't. You don't want your Main Street of your city to be a bunch of drive-in restaurants, drive-through restaurants. You don't want them to be McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, whatever. That's not Main Street. That's a clover leaf out by the interstate. You want your Main Street to be a vibrant place for entertaining and for businesses and for grocery store. Keep in mind, we have the grocery store right on Main Street, and people that live and walk. And you know, Kansas City is going to have probably. When we get done with this, and I mean, we have a great product downtown right now. We have done tremendous turnaround downtown compared to a lot of other cities. In fact, I would put our product up against almost any city in the United States from a downtown environment. But when the streetcar's there, it'll be just that much better. You know, it will. We may have the best Main Street, period, by the time we're done.
If you have any memories of the way streetcars used to be or questions about what they're going to be, call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can tweet us at KCURCST, or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Now let's go to Al in Overland Park. Good morning, Al.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, I have a memory going back to the 40s. Back then, Central played Wyandotte, the first game of the year for both teams, I believe, early in the season. And I would ride the Indiana streetcar. I would catch it at 37th in Indiana. I live close there. And it would go down Indiana to Truman Road and through downtown, across through the 8th Street Tunnel up Minnesota to 18th in Minnesota. And we'd walk to Wyandotte from there. But that was one fell swoop, one streetcar ride from 37th in Indiana to 18th in Central.
No transferring.
Minnesota, yeah. Of course, Central always lost to Wyandotte.
Would you rather have ridden the thing in a bus or a streetcar, Al?
Well, I think a bus would have been more comfortable.
Oh.
you know, I understand. The streetcar in 1940... You know, the streetcars were pretty rudimentary and basic, and there wasn't a lot of, wasn't a whole lot of comfort. but it was an interesting ride, particularly across that viaduct after you pass through the 8th Street Tunnel going to the Kansas side. That was almost like a roller coaster in terms of the height of the thing. It was pretty scary in those days.
Yeah, a bit of a thrill ride effect, I guess, going through that tunnel, as in any tunnel you go through, driving or riding a train.
And then the viaduct going down into the West Bottoms was, that was a thrill.
Okay. Well, Al, thanks so much for calling. Russ Johnson, one of Kansas City's earliest lines, as I recall, was a was something of a thrill ride from down Ninth Street.
The incline, Ninth Street incline, that's right. Yeah, they that was a cable car, I believe.
Yes.
And they had it, they needed to get up and down to the West Bottoms. And, of course, Kansas City's a hilly city. It's not as flat as some people think it might be. And so they built this incline that was like a 20-some 5% grade, which is pretty steep. And I guess they had an accident, of course, I think one time. And some people did get injured. But we have these things called roller coasters now, so if you want that sort of thrill, go out to Worlds of Fun, I guess.
In fact, Kansas City had one of the most extensive cable car systems, and to remind our viewers, though, that's what you ride in Kansas City, in San Francisco, up and down the hills. It's not electrified, is it?
Well, you know, the Kansas City streetcar system started out as horse-drawn,
right?
And then, of course, it went to cable cars, and we had these cable cars pulling all these streetcars around, and they. And then, of course, it became electrified. The first electric streetcar in the world ran in Kansas City, Missouri. It was built and designed and invented here well over 100 years ago. And today, let me tell you a little bit more about our innovation. You want to go to the modern time. We're going to put together a platform for these streetcars that allow for level boarding for both streetcars and buses. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not the same height. And so we invented a new platform here. So our platforms will be the first of their kind in the United States. And it's been approved by the federal government. They said, wow, that's pretty ingenious. We never thought of that before. But our platforms will be both bus compatible and streetcar compatible. And they were invented right here in Kansas City. So we have a great innovation when it comes to transportation. We didn't invent the cable car, but we did have a lot of cable cars. But we did invent the electric streetcar, and they're coming back.
And they were dominating for most of the decades of the existence of this. In fact, cable cars could never have been as extensive as electrified cars were because you had to have a big power plant and run a long cable underneath, tear up streets, terrifically expensive. It was a briefly used technology, as I recall.
It was. And then, of course, the electric company, the electric streetcar came along, and Kansas City Power and Light's roots and genesis was in the streetcar company. The streetcar company and the power company in Kansas City were the same company. The Third and Grand power plant was built to power streetcars. It wasn't built to electrify homes. 60% of its power when it was built was going into streetcars to operate it. Some bad business practices happened back then. Keep in mind the stock market crashed in 1929 because it was kind of the Wild West of finance. And that applied here in Kansas City too. The streetcar power company was kind of playing loose and fast with the books. And then they went broke. And what emerged from that was Kansas City Power and Light and the Public Service Corporation, which ran the streetcar system. So they broke it. They broke it in half, and we still have Kansas City Power and Light today.
It makes sense. Before there was extensive electrification of homes and businesses, streetcars would have been the biggest users of power. Why not own the means of production, I guess, of that? We have a caller. Let's go now to Mary in Blue Springs. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. I have a piece of forgotten streetcar history for Kansas City, and that is the fact that there were women conductors on the streetcars, and my grandmother was one of those. She was the last one hired in December of 1918, and she served then until 1949. The women... There was an article, actually, and an ad in the Kansas City Star that ran in 1917 that talked about the great experiment at hiring women into these positions where, because of the war, there was a shortage of men, and they lost a lot of the conductors. So they tried this great experiment at hiring women to be temporary conductors until after the war. So they worked as conductors, and after the war, there was another location in the country. There were two places where they had this great experiment at hiring women. And Kansas City was the only place that kept the women on after the war. Now, the women had to appeal to the war board in order to keep their jobs, and they were not replacing the men. They ended up as ticket takers. And most of the women who stayed, as my grandmother did, continued as ticket takers in different locations or token takers around the city.
Now, Mary, just to confirm.
But they appealed to the war board, and the women in Kansas City actually won their case. And they continued then as the only location that had women conductors that were able to stay on after the war.
Okay, Mariana, you're talking about the World War I era, not World War II.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So the earliest Rosie the Motor People, motormen running the streetcars. Thanks very much for sharing that memory, Mariana. Let's go now to Ruth Ann in Kansas City. Good morning, Ruth Ann.
Good morning. I'm a streetcar lover.
Then you're in good company.
Well, I grew up in Kansas City from the time I was a kid in grade school to well into college using the streetcars. I had an aunt who lived in Marlboro, which was beautiful, and we kids would take the streetcar from Troost, where I lived, out to Marlboro and spend the day with my aunt. I learned Kansas City by using all parts of the streetcar system, by myself for a nickel or a dime, whatever age I was. I learned how to be a person. I learned how to give my seat up to an older person. My mother and I dressed up on to go to the downtown on the streetcar. It was not uncomfortable. It was very nice. And everybody on the streetcars was, everyone was very nice. And I can remember watching the seasons change from the streetcar, with the Power and Light building changed its colors during Christmas.
Great memories of the streetcar. So, Ruth Ann, thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome.
Great story.
Russ Johnson, that's the kind of memory that a lot of people have around Kansas City.
You know, I found it really interesting that I think she described a not only just the streetcar experience, but she also described a kind of a community experience, the Kansas City spirit there, where everybody was very respectful. She was respectful there, and I think that some of that nostalgia we see is not just for those rails in the ground, but it's for maybe a time which maybe we can recreate some of that back in our downtown once again.
And you're working hard at it. Councilman Russ Johnson of the Kansas City Council, thank you so much for being with us today on Central Standard Friday. And we'll be back after our break to talk about Kansas City's enduring legends, the real ones, the ones we can put aside as interesting but untrue. Thanks again, Russ.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR.